Thank you very much. The Gemara in Masechet Pesachim tells us that it's not really proper to kasher pots and pans and dishes to Pesach if one can afford to buy separate kelim. So that's the common practice, that everybody has a separate kelim for Pesach and you don't kasher. The only thing is that every year when it comes before Pesach, the Bala Basta usually realizes that she needs another this and another that, and she buys some new kelim, and then you have to keep in mind that you require tefilas kelim. There is a mitzvah, sometimes it's a mitzvah min haTorah, sometimes a mitzvah min haRabbanan, that when you buy pots and pans, silverware, spoons, forks, knives, whatever, or glasses, or dishes, if they're made from metal, we assume that it's a biblical mitzvah, and if they're made from glass, we assume that it's a rabbinical mitzvah to take them to a mikveh, a kosher mikveh, and to recite a bracha mitayvel them, of course, provided that they once belonged to a non-Jew. If they were manufactured by a Jewish company and they were sold by a Jewish store and it never belonged to a non-Jew at any one point, so then there's no mitzvah of tefilas kelim. But if at one time it belonged to a non-Jew, then there is a mitzvah, sometimes min haTorah, sometimes min haRabbanan, of tefilas kelim. So that's one should keep this in mind. Of course, if one failed to fulfill a mitzvah of tefilas kelim, it doesn't mean that the food is trach, the food is still kosher, but you just have not fulfilled this mitzvah of tefilas kelim. Very often the food is still kosher, but you just have not fulfilled this mitzvah of tefilas kelim. Very often the husband is busy in the office and the wife is busy preparing the house for Pesach, so she'll send her little children to the mikveh with the kelim and instruct them as to how to take care of the tefilas kelim. So this is fine, provided that the children are past bar mitzvah. But if you have a child who is before bar mitzvah or bas mitzvah, even if they're very bright and very intelligent and very religious and very observant, the thing is that they don't have nemunah. You cannot trust a child before bar mitzvah regarding tefilas kelim. The only time you can trust them is in the following case, which would be a rare instance. If the child is before bar mitzvah and he's taking care of tefilas kelim on glasses, which is only midrabbanon, and then by the time you plan to use these glasses, the child will already be bar mitzvah at that time. So then he's believed to say after bar mitzvah that he had taken care of something before his bar mitzvah. That's a rare instance. Under normal circumstances, the proper thing is that you have to send the person who is bar mitzvah to take care of it. The only things that we kasher for Pesach are the things that are too expensive to buy separate for Pesach. For example, becher. So very often during the course of the year, we'll use a becher to put a little schnapps in it. And sometimes if you just have schnapps for a minute, it doesn't get absorbed into the becher. But if you have the schnapps sitting there for 6 minutes, then the schnapps will be below with the din of kavod kedushin. Sometimes you'll have a few crumbs of chametz in your bechers, in your silver bechers, and you'll leave a little water there, and the crumbs of chametz will be sitting there for more than 24 hours, soaking in water. If you don't wash your dishes right away after Shabbos, they may have it soaking there for 24 hours. So you may have a bli of chametz in your becher. So then the proper thing is, rather than settle for, if you can afford to buy all the new silver bechers for Pesach, that's wonderful. If you can't afford that, so rather than just use the glass cups for Pesach, so it is preferable to kasher the silver bechers for Pesach and have a hidden mitzvah to have silver. So then the Shulchan Aruch says that you have to be careful before you kasher, before you do the Hagolah, that you have scraped off, you have to make sure that you don't have any bien stuck, you don't have any dirt stuck on the inside of the becher. It's not necessary to polish your bechers. A lot of people think that you have to polish the bechers before you kasher them. It's not necessary to polish the bechers. In fact, sometimes that will pose a problem. When you polish it, so the polish will be stuck in the crevices. And the thing is that when you do Hagolah, you have to make sure that there's nothing stuck at all on the surface of the pot of the pan that you're kashering. So the proper thing is just to make sure that it's clean, and then to do the Hagolah, to kasher it for Pesach. Of course, most people do not have two different stoves. Many people do not have two different stoves, one for Pesach and one for all year long. So the general practice is that people kasher their stoves for Pesach. How exactly do you kasher your stove? If you have a self-cleaning oven, which you can turn up to a very high degree, then this would constitute libur. This would kasher out the oven. A high degree means 800-850 degrees. So if you have a self-cleaning oven, that's higher than that. Most of the regular ovens, the plain old style, the old-fashioned ovens that don't have the self-cleaning device in them, only go up to 550 degrees, which poses a problem. This is what we call libun kal. Shulchan Aruch says that there's a libun kal and there's a libun chomer. There's an easy form of libun and there's a more serious form of libun. So if you have something that's kosher, the only thing is that it's fleishig and you want to make it paraveh, or it's milchig and you want to make it paraveh, that's what we call heterovola. That's efficient with the libun kal, that you only it only reaches the point of 550 degrees. If you have something that's straight and you want to make it kosher, so then you need what we call libun chomer, the more serious libun. That's 850 degrees. So by Pesach, there is a dispute in the Mefarshim and the Gemara between Tosfos and the Ramban. All year long, Chometz is not treif; it's kosher. But on Pesach, it is treif. So that's the question: if you're kashering the oven before Pesach, should you say it's called hetera bala? It's basically kosher. You want to make sure that it remains kosher for Pesach, so it's efficient to kasher with 550 degrees. Or should you assume no, that it's yisura bala? Because on Pesach, Chometz is aser, so you need 850 degrees. So in the Shulchan Aruch, we're machmer on this. The Shulchan Aruch paskens that we insist on libun chomer. But regarding the stove, there are another two kulas that we employ. The one kula is that there is an opinion, which is also a questionable opinion, that if I know that the treifus that was absorbed in this pot or this pan or this stove was never absorbed in a degree that was higher than a certain temperature. I know what the maximum heat was. So then this is a question. If I know that it the treifus was never more than 450 degrees, do you still insist that you need 850 degrees to kasher? Or do you say, no, kibolo kach polto, since it only got absorbed at 450 degrees, so that's sufficient for the purpose of kashering as well. So this is a major dispute, and generally we don't accept this kula. We would not accept this kula. Let's say the OU, when they give hashgachas, do not rely on this kula. Ramosha Feinstein did not rely on that cooler. That they just heated up to the highest degree that it ever became, it ever absorbed the treifus. But regarding the ovens, we call it Pesach, the kashan for Pesach, the Rabbi Soloveitchik's opinion was that one could rely on that. If you just turn it up to the highest that you ever used it, the maximum heat that you ever used it for chametz, what is the maximum you ever did chametz? If you do chickens or flesh, that's not necessarily chametz, that's the kosher of Pesach also. You bake the bread, you bake the
cake,
cook or whatever, you bake for a few hours. So the maximum ever was 2 hours at the highest degree, broiled. So you turn it on for 2 hours, an hour and a half, on broil at 550 degrees, and that would be sufficient. So Rabbi Soloveitchik used to say that was his opinion, that for Pesach that would be sufficient based on the combination of these three considerations. First of all, there is an opinion that's not general, except there is an opinion that even if you have a baking tin, that you have the chametz mamish sitting on the baking tin itself, that would be sufficient because we call it a terubah. Secondly, he felt that there are opinions that are not generally accepted, that all you have to do is heat it up to the hottest temperature that it ever has. So you're doing that. And thirdly, this is the main point, thirdly, the kosher food is not, the Pesach Digger food is not going to be touching the top and the sides of the oven where the chametz may possibly be absorbed. The Pesach Digger food is going to be in Pesach Digger pans, kalim, that are going to be sitting on the racks. So since the bliya cannot really fly through the air, the only time of bliya, the only time the chametz that's absorbed in the walls on the side can come into the Pesach Digger food is if you have moisture or if you have thick steam. And usually in the ovens you don't have thick steam. You have a little evaporation, but when you open up an oven at any time you don't see any thick steam. The Shulchan Aruch says if you have a pot of soup that's half full and half empty, and it's hot and it's cooking, and then you take off the lid and you take a look, so you're going to see that in the upper half of the pot is going to be thick steam. So that thick steam has the same status as roitev hevel, dina kiroitev. So if by mistake you put a milchik lid on top of a fleishik pot, a fleishik lid on top of a milchik pot, the fleishik bli and the lid will fly through the air, because it's not flying through the air, it's flying in the steam, and the thick steam, which has the status like roitev, like mashke, and it brings out the bli. But in the oven you don't have that. That's why considering these three, the combination of these three considerations, Rav Soloveitchik thought that as far as kashering ovens, that would be sufficient. Moshe Feinstein years ago was very unhappy about this, and he expressed his displeasure with this. He insisted that this is not sufficient, even with the combination of all of the three coolers. He thought that that you have to have an insert that could either use a blowtorch that should reach the temperature of 850 degrees, which is practically impossible, because if you use a blowtorch, just hold it for a second, it's not going to get hot enough. You have to hold it for a couple of seconds. Hold it for a couple of seconds, the oven will start to bend in. You're going to ruin your oven. So that's why he insisted you have to use an insert. You have to put a separate little metal box inside the oven. If you use the insert, so the women say that the food doesn't bake as well. You can't, it's hard to gauge. Yeah. So that's why many people who usually follow Rabbi Soloveitchik, now those who follow Rabbi Moshe Feinstein and everything else that he says should follow him regarding this also. But those who will often follow Rabbi Soloveitchik have the right to follow his opinion here as well. As far as microwave ovens, it's the same issue as regarding the regular oven. So many people have the practice that before Pesach they want to kosher out their microwave oven. So they put in a cup of water and they turn it on that it should cook, let's say, for 10 minutes. And in 10 minutes, all of the water will evaporate and the steam that comes out will kosher out the top and the sides, so there won't be any bliyat chamtan. And even though the poskim traditionally in Europe, the poskim said that it's not proper to kosher with steam. So they said that's only if the bliyah, if something in a pot became treif, by cooking treif is in the pot. So if you have a jet, if you have a hose that shoots out steam, so it's not proper to kosher a pot with steam if the bliyah that made a treif was ayidei mashke. But here, the top and the sides of the microwave oven didn't become chometzik because you put chometz, it was sitting there. It only became treif, it only became chometzik because of the absorption, because of the steam that went up, the hevel. The evaporations that came up. So the poskim in Europe 80 years ago used to say if the whole bliyah came by they steam, so then you can kasher it out by they steam also. That's the way it's usually assumed. Some have the objection that the inside of the microwave oven is made from plastic, and it's questionable, it's a shaila, some poskim raise the topic whether one can kasher plastic or not in general. Some have the policy that for Pesach they're machmir, and for treifas we're makel, that you can kosher plastic, if an issue whether it's treif or not, all year long, you accept, you allow hagola. But as far as chometz is concerned, some machmer not to allow hagola. But as far as the microwave oven, usually people cover over their food in the microwave oven. So what's the chashash that a bliyah is going to fly through is if it's highly improbable. So if a person koshers the microwave oven by putting in a cup of water and having it all have it cook for 10 minutes, and all the water will evaporate, and then on Pesach you use it by wrapping up all the food, that's more than enough, that's certainly acceptable. As far as the dishwashers also, most people find it a little too expensive to buy a separate dishwasher for Pesach. We started off by mentioning the Gemara says Msochim, that whenever possible it's not proper to kasher for Pesach, you should always have separate dishes, except if it's too expensive. So most people find it a little too expensive to buy a separate dishwasher for Pesach. So the shayla is, can you kasher the dishwasher? So the poskim, the contemporary poskim say it depends what the material of the inside of the dishwasher is made of. In the industrial dishwashers that they use in cafeterias and hotels, the inside of the dishwasher is stainless steel. So steel you can kosher, so that's not a problem. And the little dishwashers that people use in their private homes, usually the inside of the dishwasher is porcelain, which was traditionally assumed to be kli cheres. And kli cheres, hagola doesn't help. If it's not porcelain, sometimes they're made from plastic, so then you have the shaila whether you can do hagola on the plastics. In the microwave oven, it's not such a problem because the truth of the matter is all the food is wrapped up anyway, so the bliyah is not going to fly through the air, and even if the food wouldn't be wrapped up, the bliyah doesn't fly in the air unless you have thick steam. You don't have any thick steam. So they were makel to do the hagola with the steam, and you wrap up your food on Pesach, it's not a problem. Here in the dishwasher, where the hot water is going to be shooting on Pesach, it's going to bounce off of the walls, and the water will, burning hot water will bounce on the walls and bounce on the dishes. So that's a more serious question. So that's why many are of the opinion that it's not proper to kasher the private dishwashers that people have in their home. It's not proper to kasher for Pesach. It's not proper to rely on the cooler. It's questionable whether one can rely on the cooler that you can do hagola on plastic. Porcelain is generally assumed that you cannot do a hagola. Even if you have to have a stainless steel dishwasher that you can kasher, there's still a bit of a problem. The drain, where all of the water goes down, has a separate receptacle to hold on to the particles of food that may have still remained. Usually they recommend that you wash off the dishes under the water before you put them in the dishwasher in order to get off all the big chunks, not to clog up your dishwasher. But if you still have tiny particles of food, where does it go? So these particles don't go all the way down the drain of the dishwasher, they get caught. So if you'll take apart your machine, if you take a screwdriver, take apart the machine, at where the drain is, you will find that there's quite a bit of the end that's caught over there. So this is a big problem. Whenever you kasher a stainless steel dishwasher for Pesach, the proper thing is that you have to take apart that drain and remove all of the particles of chametz that may possibly be there. It's not that difficult, but it is a bit of a pain in the neck. Of course, when you kasher, if you're kashering dishwashers, so very often you'll have a glass thing in the front of the door, and then you have a rubber gasket that goes around the edge of the glass to hold it tight when you close the door. So very often there'll be cracks in this rubber gasket, or very often there is a possibility of having some chametz or some particles caught in between the rubber and the back of the door. So this a person has to be very careful for that before they kasher. If you have cracks, it's probably impossible to get out all of the particles that'll get caught in the cracks if you have an old gasket. But even if you have a new one, you have to be very careful to make sure that nothing got caught, nothing is caught in between the back of the rubber and the door. The practice generally is that instead of destroying all of the chametz that we have around the house, we ask our rabbi, we appoint our rabbi as our shliach. We don't really sell the chametz to the rabbi, we appoint the rabbi as the shliach to sell our chametz on our behalf. We pointed out on different occasions that in Europe there was a big machlokes if a person is traveling east or west and is going to be in a different time zone for Pesach from where his chametz is. I live in New York, my chametz is in New York, and I plan to be in Eretz Yisrael or in California for Pesach. So here there's a big question, which zman is the zman that counts for the purpose of Mechiras chametz? Does it depend on where my chametz is, or does it depend on where I am? Because if I ask the rabbi in Yerushalayim to sell my chametz, true, he'll sell the chametz 7 hours earlier than in New York, but he's going to buy it back earlier. He's going to buy it back even a day and a half earlier, because he's going to buy it back after 7 days of Pesach.
This year
it's okay because it's Shabbos. But still, he'll buy the chametz back on Matzoi Shabbos, so it'll be 7 hours in New York, it'll still be another 7 hours to go till the end of Pesach. And if I'll ask my rabbi in New York to sell the chametz, he'll be selling it 7 hours after the Zman Yisrahanu already began where I am. So there was a big dispute in Europe whether the Zman of Mechirat Chametz, where the person, the owner of the chametz is in one location and the chametz is situated in a different location, whether the Ika Zman depends on where the person is and where the chametz is. So that's why it's recommended that all those people who plan to travel east or west, if you're going north or south and it's the same time zone approximately and Afkamina 5 minutes here or there, so it doesn't really make such a difference. But if you're going east or west considerably, not stomp to New Jersey, you're going to California or Territory Soil, a significant difference, so then the proper thing is to have your local Orthodox rabbi make a separate shtar mechira for you, where he sells your chametz according to the earlier time and he buys it back according to the later time, so you're covered in both directions. Whatever shita you'll say is the more correct shita, that you should be covered. Now, is it proper to sell, let's say they have Wheaties on sale before Pesach, so I'm going to buy a ton of Wheaties and I'm going to sell it to the guys. That's proper to stock up on Wheaties and on cakes and on cookies and put everything away in the freezer and sell it all to the guys. So Rabbi Soloveitchik for many years used to be mocked about this every year. He would announce in Baal Batim and the yeshiva that his personal opinion was, like those poskim who felt, that it's really a problem. There is an issue of ha'aroma. Are you permitted to do what we call a legal fiction? You sell a chametz to the goy, and strictly speaking it doesn't belong to me, it's absolutely legal, 100% belongs to the goy, I'm not in violation by you or by matzah, but still, I wasn't really interested in selling my chametz to the goy, yeah, everybody knows I'm going to buy it back, so that's what we call a legal fiction, so he's gehalten, but it's what we call in the Talmud ha'aroma. Is it permissible to use a ha'aroma? So there was a significant group of gedolim from 150 years ago who were of the opinion that haram is only permissible with respect to dinim derabbanan and not with respect to dinim derayta. So that's what Rabbi Soloveitchik used to recommend as follows, that if you have Wheaties or bread or cake or cookies or spaghetti, something that's real chametz bien, so he felt that that's not proper to rely on mechiras chametz, that you should really give away or sell to the goy that you should keep it. Sell it to the goy you should keep it. Don't have a mind to buy it back. Or destroy it, get rid of it somehow. If you have what we call taruvas chametz, you have something which has a little chametz mixed in. More than 50% of the food is non-chametz, and less than 50% is a meal of chametz in it, so although you're not permitted to eat it, but since there is an opinion in Tosfos that there the violation of Ayura by Motze is only with the Rabbanon, so the poskim in Europe said, those who are machmir said that in this case you can rely on those who hold that it's only by Ayura by the Rabbanon to allow a haroma in this instance. That's what Rabbi Soloveitchik always used to recommend. Then they used to ask Rabbi Soloveitchik, what about schnapps? They used to say, besser nicht zu frech. In the Shulchan Aruch, strictly speaking, the Shulchan Aruch, it seems that schnapps is considered the chomen dogen gomer. Flour also, regular flour that you buy years ago, flour that used to be bleached, was not considered chomets. It's just that you didn't make matzahs from bleached flour, but from the 1500s on, they have a different process of bleaching flour. It's not what in the days of the Gemara was called the sisa, that they would just pour water on the kernels of grain, pour water lightly, and then the water would dry off in a few moments. From the 1500s on, they soak the kernels of grain for many, many hours, if not for several days, and they really make a good job when they clean it all. That's why the poskim say that today, the regular flour is not considered kemach min hashuk, that it's not chometz. Today, the regular flour is the real chometz. It's possibly chometz dogen gomer. So again, it's not proper to sell regular flour either, if one wants to be machmir for this. Many Gdolim in Europe didn't hold from this. They held that you can have real bread and real cake and cookies and just sell it to the goy and buy it back, and it's not a problem. But Rabbi Soloveitchik always used to recommend that people should be machmir. On the schnapps, he didn't want to say, because in the Shulchan Aruch it's considered chometz dogen gomer, so he said it's better not to get involved. There is a malkum to be makel on the schnapps that runs as follows. There is an opinion that all schnapps is kosher l'pesach because it's distilled. We don't pass like this, but there is such an opinion that because schnapps is distilled, means like this, you soak the kernels of grain in water for several days, if not for several weeks, and then they heat up this liquid, and they heat it up and the alcohol evaporates, and then later on it condenses and it converts back into liquid. So when it's in the intermediate stage, when it's evaporated and it's in the state of gas, you can't say that it's treif. You can only say that food or liquids, beverages of food are treif. How can you say that gas is chometzik? It doesn't make any sense. So there is a minority opinion that holds that even after it condenses back again, you can't say that it becomes chometz at that time. A chometz yesh meyayin. If at one stage it was gas, even if later on it condenses, that would be mutter. That's what the poskim called zeo b'yalma. When something was evaporated and then later on it condensed, so there was such an opinion that it's always mutter. Yeah, that's the opinion. That's what Chaim Eisner writes in his Chumash, that there were Orthodox Jews in Europe who used to drink any brandy. They would drink any cognac, even though they knew that it started off as treif wine, because all of the cognacs and all the brandies were distilled. It says on the bottom that it's distilled on the bottle. Distilled means that they evaporated and then it condenses. So the fact that it started off as stam yeinam, as treif wine, didn't bother them because since it was evaporated, then it became kosher, and then it became, even after it turned back into a liquid, it didn't become treif again. But he writes that that's not the generally accepted opinion. And even those who would drink all the liquors, that's why they were only mekel because stam yeinam is only an issa derabbanan. As far as drinking schnapps on Pesach, we wouldn't be mekel to say you're allowed to drink schnapps on Pesach, chometz because schnapps on Pesach, that's the shayla v'nisa deraisa, so that we wouldn't be mekel. As far as chometz over all of our Pesach, that's a question. Let's say I know that there's a liquor company that's owned by a Jew, and he doesn't sell his chometz. So would you say that it's chometz over all of our Pesach? So the pashtus is that, yeah, why not? So the shayla, in Europe they used to have the shayla, let's say the Jew had a liquor shop, a religious Jew, and he forgot to sell, he went to the rabbi, he told the rabbi he wants to sell the spaghetti and this, he forgot to tell the rabbi he wants to sell the whole liquor shop. And then he comes on Erev Pesach before davening, late in the afternoon, at the month of that he forgot to sell all the schnapps in the store. Then it's too late, then you can't sell it. It's too late to sell on Erev Pesach after the Zman Yisar HaNoah, after 11 o'clock in the morning. So there were them in Europe who were mekel on that wouldn't be considered chometz shalom or Pesach if it's a big shas atchak and a hefset merubah. If there's not a big hefset merubah, so the pashtus is that that you should treat schnapps as real chometz dogen gomer, and then you should say that it is chometz shalom or Pesach.
And what to do with it? In other words, you have to give away the schnapps.
Get rid of it?
Yeah.
Drink it? Make a seal. Drink it. And I sell it to an offer and the guy should keep it. I used to sell the schnapps to my next door neighbor. He drank it on the spot. I didn't explain to him in advance that I want to buy it back after Pesach. I told him I have schnapps I want to sell. I figured after Pesach I'll discuss. On our Pesach is already gone. The schnapps disappeared overnight. In many of the stores they still sell kosher Pesach peanut oil. So this, of course, the women should keep in mind is questionable because the Ashkenazim have a minig not to eat kidneys, not to eat beans and bevelach and so on Pesach. So there is a question, number one, whether peanuts are included in kidneys. I remember one of the rabbeim that I had in the yeshiva told us that when they were running away from the Nazis, he was with the Miri yeshiva, so he was in Shanghai for several years. So he says, on Chalamite Pesach, they were sitting in the base medrash and eating peanuts. And the goy, the Chinaman, kept on saying, hummets, hummets, and they didn't know what in the world, what hummets, what is he talking about? So he came over and he pointed to the peanuts. He said that was the first time in his life, he was in his 30s, so the first time in his life he ever heard that there's anything wrong with eating peanuts on Pesach. Where he came from in Europe, they never heard of that. So that's one question, whether peanuts were included in the minig of kidneys or not. The other question is, even if you have something that is included in kidneys, whether the minig, not to eat kidneys, even applies to shemen that comes from kidneys. It's generally assumed that it's not proper. That it's not proper to have shemen that comes from kidneys. So that's why it's questionable regarding the peanut oil. It has a hashgacha, so Rav Moshe Feinstein, Zuchel Rav, writes in his sefer, of course, they had big rabbanim from the Agudas Rabbanim, to give a hashgacha on the peanut oil. So he says, obviously, they relied on this opinion and that opinion, but he explains what the issue is. It's a question whether it's permissible or not. So those who say it is permissible, those who say that's not. One balabasta mentioned to me that the last Pesach, by mistake, she forgot all about the meaning that you don't eat kidneys, so she wanted to treat her family to something delicious, so she bought corn on the cob, and she cooked it in the Pesach bigger pots, and then before they started to eat it, then they realized that corn is included in the meaning of kidneys, that you don't eat corn on Pesach. So she has a shiloh, so they didn't eat it. Sure. So you don't have to throw it away, you just put it away, you permitted to, you don't have to sell the kidneys to the performance, you permitted to leave it in the refrigerator, you don't have to throw it out. So she had a shiloh, does she have to kasha her pots or not? So she have to kasha the pots? So the post can say that since kidneys is only a minhog, so as long as you wait 24 hours after having cooked the kidneys, then there's no need to kasha the pots. If you didn't wait 24 hours, that's the question. For example, the Sfardim have generally not accepted the minig forbidding kidneys, so they do eat all of these beans and they eat rice. That's also a bit of a problem. We had the Iranian students learning in the yeshiva the last several years. So their minig was in the Altaheim that they ate rice on Pesach, so they bought their rice in America also, but they didn't realize, they told me they didn't realize that the rice in America is enriched. It's enriched with grain. It has chometz enrichment in it. So even Sfardim who like to eat rice on Pesach should be careful not to get chometz digger rice. There's kosher the Pesach digger rice and the chometz digger rice. So let's say someone is visiting by a Sfardi, and the Sfardim cook their rice. I'm not permitted to eat the rice. My meaning is that I don't eat it. So the question is, I'm not allowed to eat anything because all of the food was cooked in their pots where they were cooking the rice. So that's what the pots can say, that the proper thing is, whenever possible, to be machmir, that if it's within 24 hours since the rice was cooked, the proper thing is that I should not eat any food that was cooked in the pot within 24 hours. But after 24 hours have lapsed already, so then there's no need to kasher the pot. That's not a problem. Many Hasidim have the minig not to eat kibroks on Pesach, with the exception of the last day of Pesach. So this year, the last day means the chutzlaris. There you saw, there's no kula on the last day of Pesach. The kula is in the chutzlaris. When you have an 8-day Pesach, that's only with the Rabbanon, so then they'll eat kibroks on the last day of Pesach. So this year, the last day of Pesach by us is Shabbos. So we're not permitted to cook any food on Shabbos. So what will the people do? The people will make an erev tavshilin. When they cook the food, on Shvi Shal Pesach for Shabbos. So that's a big shaila that the Poskim discussed 150 years ago. Erev Tavshilin is good because I'm cooking food today on Yom Tov, which I want. If I want to, I can really eat it today. So instead of eating it today, I'll eat it tomorrow. But if you cook Gibroks on Shvi Shal Pesach and you have many gears, you have from the Chassidim, you don't eat Gibroks, so how can you have a heter of Erev Tavshilin? So this is a big dispute. Rabbi Kivega has about this, and some Sefer. The minig oilam is lahakelana by the Hasidim, because Gibrox is really mutter mikra din. It's only a chumra, so they feel that it's not really doesn't really cause a problem.
What's the chumra of Gibrox based on?
The Gemara says that if you have matzahs that were baked already, if you grind them up and you make matzah mel of farfel and you have it soaked in water from today till next year, it will not become chometz. Once it was baked already, it's not bole dechimah. So the Hasidim introduced this chumra. That maybe that was only Bismana Gemara, that they used to bake the matzahs very well, so it was baked through and through. But Bismana said, it could be that we don't bake as well as in the days of the Gemara. Let's say when you buy broiled livers from the butcher, so the livers will be burnt on the inside, on the top and on the bottom. On the top and the bottom, it's on the outside it's burnt, and on the inside it's mamish raw. But that was what the Hasidim introduced the Chumra. Maybe the matzah sataka brown and black on the top and on the bottom, and in the middle, maybe that it's raw dough. So true, it doesn't become, it doesn't continue to become chometz. It's raw dough, so it becomes chometz because it's sitting. So the answer is no. The heat of the oven was enough to evaporate all of the moisture in the middle section of the matzah, so it doesn't continue to become chometz. Because you have raw dough and you heat it until you evaporate the water, it's not chometz. But then when you soak it in water, now it'll become chometz because it's raw dough that never really got baked. So that's the shaila, is there such a chashash? But Rav Chaim, they write in this form, but Rav Chaim Volozhin had told over to the Vilna Gaon that the Hasidim had introduced a new chumrit, and that's all the Vilna Gaon had to hear that Hasidim introduced. That's like waving a red flag in front of a bull. So the Vilna Gaon wanted to show all the Balabatim and Vilna that he doesn't accept the chumrit, so they say that he put a knedel in the window all of the days of Pesach to show that he does hold chumrit.
He should have eaten the knedel.
One of the Misnagdishik Doylem, the Nesibis, the one who wrote the Nesibis HaMishpat on the Shulchan Aruch HaShemishpat, also was a Misnagid, and one of his sons-in-law was a famous Hasidish Talmud Chacham, the Maharuch. So whenever he would visit by the father-in-law, he would, on Pesach, he wouldn't give him Gibroch. So they say that once, at the end of Pesach, he expressed his gratitude to his father-in-law that he didn't give him a hard time. He didn't give him Gibroch, and he said, what's he going to do? He's going to say he doesn't want to eat it. So he thanked him for not giving him a hard time. So the father-in-law said, no, I wasn't doing you a favor. That was a punishment. If you don't have enough seichel to understand how good Gibroch is, so you don't deserve to eat it. The knedel. That was the einish that he didn't give him the knedel. But anyway, the Hasidim have the meaning that they don't eat Gibroch, and others have the meaning that they do. So even those that have the minig limuta, that is just a chumrah, that the Bezen Shalmaila shouldn't punish those who are eating gibroch. We're showing that they're all doing wrong, so even on the last day Pesach, even those who have the minig, not to eat it, we all eat gibroch to show that it's really muta. So even this year, on the last day Pesach is Shabbos, and we don't cook the gibroch on Shabbos, you make an Eftav Shilin. So even though it's a little bit questionable, there is literature on the topic. The minigarden is that with the use of the Erev Tav Shilin, even the Hasidim would prepare the Gibroch on... on the night of Pesach, after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. During the time the Beis HaMikdash was standing, you had to eat the Korban Pesach. The Korban Pesach had to be broiled. You couldn't boil it, you couldn't roast it, you couldn't make it, couldn't prepare it in any other fashion. After the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, there were two minhagim. So some communities had the minhag to make a Zecher LaMikdash. Even though we don't have a Korban Pesach, we should be mahadah to eat the afkir broiled meat on Pesach night, to remember, as the Gevel Amolah Beis HaMikdash, we used to eat a broiled carbon Pesach. And in other communities, the meaning was Tum Takert, in order that nobody should think that we're eating carbon as Chutz La Beis HaMikdash, which is a violation of an Issa Koreis, the Shech, the Kotshin Ba. livers were full of blood before. And you're not supposed to use the same broiler for livers and for livers that had blood and for meat that had no blood. The meat was already cooked. So you should hold it with a fork or something else. You shouldn't broil it on the same grid. So Tosis explains why is the minig that the Shnei Tavshilin should be broiled, the egg, and they have to be cooked for sure, but the minig is that you broil them. Why? Because these are supposed to be, the Gemara says, Zeichel Pesach and Zeichel Chagigah, to reminisce, to remind us of the two karbonis that we no longer have because there's no Beis HaMikdash. The two karbonis used to have in the days of the Beis HaMikdash, the Chagigah and Erev Pesach, Chagigah Sarbos and the Korban Pesach. And according to the Mishnah, both of them had to be broiled, the Korban Pesach for sure. And the Chagigah is a dispute, and the Mishnah says, Halayla zeh kulot zlit. Mishnah followed the opinion of Ben Tema, one Tana, who thinks that the both karbonis had to be broiled. So Taisa says, since it's all zechel the karbonis, and they both had to be broiled, we should broil it also. So what happens, let's say, this year, if you didn't broil it on Erev Pesach, you can't broil it on Leil Pesach, Leil Pesach Shabbos, so that's out of the question. So you'll have a cooked fligala, and you'll have a cooked egg. The world doesn't come to an end, so you'll observe the din without the meat. What about for the second night of Pesach? So to broil an egg is no question. The shaila is, what about broiling the fligala on the second night, but you can't eat? Are you permitted to cook food on Yontif? On Yontif, you're not allowed to do malach. It's only Oichel Nefesh, what you can eat, but you're not allowed to eat it. Are you permitted to broil the you're not permitted to give them trei for food. It's a question whether you're permitted to give them even trei for midirabbanan, macholos asur midirabbanan. If you give them something that's only a violation of a minig, that's certainly permissible. So he says you can give all of the kidneys you want to babies, to young children. But for adults, the proper thing is that in America, the minig always was to be machmaran. Yeah, that's a good question. Okay, but maybe we should open the floor for a little bit of
there's no time.
Okay.
I want to thank Rav Schechter for an excellent shiur as usual, and to wish him a hakasha v'zameya, and to say to him that with God's help, you will have the privilege of listening to him once more next year.
Sorry.